Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. I want to tell you that in respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering sliding scale online psychotherapy and life coaching to anyone who's suffering financially. And there's also the free sharing meeting with Dr. Fujian Zain and experts every Thursday at 6 p.m. via Zoom. So go to any of my social media, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, either under Dr. Fujian Zain or Dr. Zain, and you'll find the meeting ID and password. Today, I'll be speaking with Sister Jenna, the founder of Brahma Kumaris Meditation Center and the host of the American Meditating Radio. And she will be doing this amazing meditation with all of us because we certainly all need it at this point. And then afterward, I'll be speaking with Angela Nazarian. She is a best-selling author and the sought-after international speaker. She is the co-founder and the CFO of Visionary Women and a nonprofit women's leadership organization in Los Angeles. Brings together some of the most dynamic thought leaders in the country. And she has been known to be the top 12 philanthropist in Los Angeles. And she is the writer, the author of this amazing book, It's Creative Couples, that she has interviewed and not interviewed, but researched 12 of amazing couples in the world and talks about their relationships. So I'm positive you're going to enjoy the show. Before I tell you about the tip of the week, I want to tell you one of my friends is manufacturing these masks. I know everybody's needing masks, and this has a pocket inside. It's 100% cotton, and you can actually put a tissue here, take the tissue out, wash this again, and wear it again. It's going to be forever-fabrics.com. Forever-fabrics.com. Please go to that. I've known about some of the apps that are free for you, mindset for anyone who's going through depression. If you wanted meditation ones, B-Zone, B-B-E-E Zone, or Pause for Peace. Please go to these apps. They're free for you, and please use them throughout the day because I know we really need it. Now, this is a tip of the week. Now, this has been an interesting week emotionally for me and the people who I've been talking to. The mixed feelings of fear, sadness, agitation, anger, boredom, helplessness, eagerness, anything, any of the feelings that you probably have been experiencing. And they're being felt during the day. Depending on whether you were watching the news, watching a YouTube video, talking to a friend, watching a movie alone, or with your family, working from home or at the office, going to the grocery store, or just walking outside, you can be experiencing all range of emotions. So how can you ride the emotions without getting consumed by it? First, embrace it. Let it exist within you. Don't fight with it. Don't make it wrong. And please, don't dump it on anyone around you. Now listen carefully. Listen carefully to what it says, what your emotion says. The message that it has for you, the thought behind it, the story that is causing this emotion within you, the need that is trying to get fulfilled, and the boundaries that you need to be set. Check the thoughts to see if they're real and based on the reality of the present moment or the past that has gone, but something's still not complete, or the future that it's not here. Is the thought, the belief, or the perception realistic and that you have some control or ability to create an action about it? Or is it a thought process about someone or something out there which you have no control over? These recent weeks, I'm sure that you can distinguish between the areas that you have absolutely no control over versus areas that you can actually do something about. You can't do anything about the people who are already infected in the hospital with the virus. You cannot do anything about how many people are getting infected or how it could infect you out there, whether it's the air or wherever it is, or how the economy of the world will turn out when all becomes the past norm again. However, you also know that you have control over staying put at home. washing your hand, sanitizing, wearing masks and gloves, and distancing yourself and protecting yourself by your actions. And this way, you will also be helping others not to catch it from you. So let's do what you can do, and the rest of the time, spend quality time with yourself, your family at home, and others via video. Become creative, do what you're passionate about, help others when it's possible, and see the beauty in what it is about to flourish from the time that you have to go in. To go in, be inside, and look at the amount of energy, creativity, beauty that could come out of you focusing on what's going on inside and the people who are around you. Connect to the beauty, connect to the love, connect to the hope, connect to all that is great, and just stay there in that type of a connection, although you are seeing what you need to be doing. So don't go anywhere. You're going to have an amazing time with these two amazing ladies. Don't forget, you're going to need the masks forever-fabrics.com is for the mask. And join me at the sharing. I love to hear from you. I like to be connected to you and see what it is that you need at this time so I can share what I have with you. So, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with amazing Sister Jenna.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zane, and I'd love to connect with you. I've created a sharing meeting with Dr. Fujian and other experts every Thursday at 6 p.m. Los Angeles time via Zoom. So please go to zoom.com and put in the meeting ID 689-941-5883. Go to my Twitter, Dr. Zane, or Instagram, Dr. Fujian Zane, and connect with me and get all the information. See you there.
I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I am so excited to be with Sister Dr. Jenna. She is the founder of Brahma Kumaris Meditation Museum, and she is the host of America Meditating Radio. And she's with us to give us the jewel of her wisdom and meditation for me, and then for me to share it with all of you. And today, I was going to ask you for a favor of the essence of protection. And I have heard you before and I loved it. And I want to share that with all of my audience.
Okay, lovely. Well, let's go for it and see how it turns out. You know, a lot of times when I sit for meditation, I generally start with where I am. And many of you who know me very well, I tend to be as authentic as possible. So I don't necessarily always do well, like if I'm just this. It's like I have to start with where I am. And that's what I teach individuals to do, to start where you are, because your most truthful part of yourself will emerge in your meditations. Of course, when you get supporting tools from various teachers that guide you in meditation, it's helpful. But I urge you to get into the practice, to really check where you are currently in your life, what thoughts and feelings, what are the circumstances that are surrounding you, and then just ask, how am I feeling right now? And that will begin to stir the real dialogue that you need to be having with self. Okay? All right, so in terms of, I'd like to position the divine meditation comes because I'm not so fully attached to all my labels. And there are two forms of divine meditation that I'd like to do, but this one I feel is very important for the particular times that we're in. When I'm attached to my name, gender, role, religion, it does create some fear. If systems, circumstances, society, or relationship tries to challenge me, that it might take all of those away from me. I might lose my religion, I might lose my money, I might lose my status, I might lose my looks as I get older. And those can impact the way the soul feels about itself. So what if we turned that energy of consciousness around? And my primary focal point is to really get into the acceptance and the beauty of understanding. The energy of the soul is what radiates my beauty through my eyes, through my mouth, through my body, through my religion, through my titles. What if I'm able to bring the energy of light and the energy of dignity, spiritual dignity and spiritual honor into the roles that I play, then I will feel like I am protected. The reason why we will feel protected is that when you live from inside out, you live from a place of eternity. You live from a place of power and truth. You live from a place of infinity, because the energy of the soul can never die. It can never be burnt. It can never be stripped. It can never go through that sort of a physical experience that we go through when we feel like our license is taken away from us, our partner has left us, our money has been lost, okay? So I just want you to flip, just turn around your consciousness for a little and take a deep breath in and out. Breathe in and out a few times. And as you breathe in and out and start to relax, I meditate with eyes open, but it's up to you. You can gently close them or just as if you're daydreaming. And the reason why open-eyed meditation is so important, again, as I've stressed in previous meditations, is that you're in control of what you choose to think and feel while you're with people, while you're engaged in actions. You can still choose how you wish to receive or perceive the situation. It always means the soul's qualities and virtues, they are in charge, not the events of the outside world. All right. So with your eyes gently opened, you've taken your deep breath.
I just wanted to say how beautiful that was. I just wanted to acknowledge that, how important of a skill that is to be able to be with the present moment and others while you are so in management of where the state of being you need to be internally to interact with the world as is. So thank you for that.
And I think that's what we need more of. You know, when I was a young girl in my teenage years, I've often thought when people meditate, they kept closing their eyes. And so you always felt like you could only meditate with eyes closed. So people would always tell me, I don't have time to meditate. So as I was maturing and growing and understanding there are different ways of meditation, I really adapted to, I want to be in control of how I think and see things with my eyes wide open in the world. And maybe that's why I've preferred Raja Yoga meditation so much. So let's dive into this experience of breaking away from labels so I can feel a sense of protection. And just travel with me. This one is going to be a little slow and easy, maybe a little bit long. So just appreciate that the experience you're going to attain will be very lasting. So one more time, take a deep breath in and breathe out. And during this crisis that we're in, or during this moment in history, The fear is overwhelming, and so is the anxiety, because a lot of the things that we have believed in are now being tested by the mere fact that they might be taken away from us, or I might be losing them. That makes us so feel fearful. So we're flipping around the consciousness for a moment, and we're going to be working from inside out. I can lose money, but I can also gain it back. I can lose a person, but I can find someone back. I can lose weight, but I can also gain it back. But when I lose time, I can't gain that back. So each thought that you have is connected to time. So what if you chose to simply decide to let go of your attachment to the way your name sounds and the karmic energy that travels with your name? That whenever people call you by your name, there's a particular feeling that comes over you. Let that go for a little and observe the experience very easily, very gently. Breathe it in and exhale. And think about what it's like to let go of the attachment to your gender. You think like a woman because you look in the mirror and you see a woman. You think like a man because you look in the mirror and see a man. What if you just chose to look in the mirror and see a soul, a sparkling light? You're not your gender. Observe the feeling. Let go of your attachment to your role that you play, your titles. If you're a doctor and somebody gives you a malpractice, it could be devastating. So just let go of your title. You're not your title, you're not your role. Observe how that feels. Breathe that in, let it out. Can you imagine you're no longer a mother, a father, a sister, a brother, the owner of a business, an American, Persian, European, black, white? Let go of all of that attachment. Let go of the nationality. Let go of the race. Let go of even your religion. And just for a little bit, if you have no name, gender, role, title, religion, race, as an attachment in the way you frame who you think you are. Wouldn't you feel a deep sense of protection? Because nothing can harm you. You're in your mode of eternity, immortality. You're present. And in this awareness, you would feel God's energy gently hovering over you, constantly protecting and guiding and empowering you, because energy connects to energy. When it's high, elevated, and powerful, they connect. And it just becomes one. So breathe that in for a little bit. Inhale what you're feeling. Just exhale. Allow the way you feel being unattached to become a very natural vibration. So you can be at a party. You can be in the car. You can be in a meeting. You can be isolated. You'll have the same feeling. Breathe in deeply and exhale again. Breathe in deeply, exhale again. You will always feel a great sense of protection when you walk around being non-attached. You will always feel a deep sense of protection when you walk around feeling love and loved and lovable. So the energy of love has no boundaries. Attachment does. The energy of love has no limits. Attachment does. So the more we break the attachment to these limited perceptions of ourselves, the more our energy of the soul, the energy behind our eyes, gets expanded. So again, as I told you, when you're meditating with your eyes opened and walking and moving around, you're contemplating these higher thoughts. And so wherever you go, you're spreading the fragrance of that vibration into the atmosphere and into these relationships. So I hope you all enjoyed that very simple, easy meditation for your deepening of your own personal protection as a soul. Forget the human dimension. It's the soul that we wish to protect. So these quality of thoughts will keep your soul feeling safe and protected. Thank you, Fujian.
Thank you so much. For all of you, please stay tuned for more meditation from Sister Dr. Jenna. Thank you.
Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at Fujian.com, Foojan.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I am so excited to have Angela Nazarian with us today. She's a best-selling author and sought-after international speaker. She incorporates her training in psychology and teaching experience in creating dynamic and engaging speaking engagements and workshops. Angela is the co-founder and the CFO of Visionary Woman, a nonprofit women's leadership organization in Los Angeles that brings together some of the most dynamic thought leaders in the country. And Angelino Magazine has listed her as one of their top 12 philanthropists in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure meeting you, and I've met you a couple of times, but I actually came to the book signing for the Creative Couples book. And as you see, I've been reading and putting notes all over here. I love this book. I read it and I was looking at the different couples, and some of these couples I kind of personally had, you know, they were my favorites. And, you know, I looked at like Salvador Dali. And then so as I was reading through some of these, the importance of their relationship, Alhan, it was eye-opening for me. And I'm positive we're going to go through that with everyone. But before that, since definitely you're a lecturer in psychology, you are a psychologist, and your background is that, and you've done extensive research for this book when it comes to couples. Can you tell me what you're thinking, what your thought and feelings are about what's going on with all the couples at this point, which you have had to be quarantined together for more than 30 days, and we have no idea when it's going to end?
Yes, I think that's a fantastic question to start with, because everybody's experiencing that right now. And I think in terms of couplehood, and how you make living arrangements where you're together 24/7, it really does affect your relationship in some ways. What we see is that we find ourselves anxious, wanting boundaries. So I know that there's a lot of couples right now that are trying to renegotiate their boundaries of how much time they want to see each other during the day. I think the couples that have had bad relationships, this intensifies everything because of all the stressors of being together all the time. As a matter of fact, because I'm the CFO and co-founder of Visionary Women, this past month, we have given almost $100,000 of our membership money towards COVID-related initiatives. And of course, one of them is domestic violence. If you believe it or not, domestic violence has risen greatly. So women and children are sometimes found in very precarious scenarios. But, you know, there's also a silver lining to this. And I'm experiencing this with my own husband. I always said to myself that I never would want my husband to be working at home. Like, we wanted to have our own separateness. So when we come together, there was this kind of newness and talking about things. But I'm really surprised, like, this past month hasn't been bad at all. I think that we both have had our own kind of ritual. He goes up to his office. I'm in my own office. We come for lunch. He goes back to work. And then in the evening, and the interesting thing is that I have two grown adult kids. So they come and join us. So there's a whole feeling of togetherness and connectivity that I'm sensing as well. So that's also really interesting. And I think I also talk about it in the book is that when you have a partner, a real partner reflects back what you are dealing with in a very interesting way. So if we keep an open mind and even find those times that we're bickering a little bit to see what it's really uncovering for us, it's a chance to learn and grow together.
Absolutely. I've had similar experience personally like you, and my husband and I just kind of like go into our own rooms and offices, come back, connect with each other. And then in the evening now we've had time to watch movies, and we go from English speaking to Farsi speaking to Indian movies to now international movies and Spanish movies. So it's been a different experience to be together. And then like when we feel too much in each other's space to kind of like move around and go. But I've also had the experience with my clients where especially when their relationship was not that great at the beginning and they just can't handle this type of being close because all their hurt shows up and they don't have anywhere to hide. And also the ones that are going through a lot of financial hardship, the type of anger that shows up in the frustration and sadness and sorrow is constantly within the space where they feel very powerless. So that's also beginning to create a lot of issues. So, you know, hang in there, everybody who are out there. We're going to pass through this. We're going to get through this together, and all will hopefully will be well. Going back to your book, first of all, explain for our audience what the book is about and what got you to really want to write such a book with amazing, amazing accomplished couples.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for that question. You know, this is my fourth book, and two of my best-selling books were on female leadership. And those two books, I interviewed Nobel laureates, you know, the women that were the first in their discipline to do something incredible. And what I found out that a lot of these women that were able to accomplish a lot, they oftentimes had a mentor or a father or a partner that really was steadfastly supporting their endeavors. And I thought that it's important, especially in this time where I'm also a leader of a women's group, that we bring men into the conversation. We don't really live our lives in a vacuum. We all interact with men, and we also have to have great respect and admiration for the men who are our co-partners. So this idea came to me right after my third book that I'd like to actually take a look at some of the most important partnerships of the 20th century, couples that move the needle in a very significant way in 20th century culture, and take a look, uncover what their relationships look like. So I really started the book with the beginning of the 20th century and came all the way to present time. And I try to cover people from all ranges and all fields. Of course, in my doing so, I want to make sure that those couples were working with each other somehow. Sometimes the way I chose the couples was sometimes the female was the public face, sometimes it was the man, sometimes they were both together, and try to look at those dynamics in some way.
It has been really interesting as I was reading it, that the amazing dynamic between some of these couples. And one thing that was really intriguing for me was that the love of many of these couples that you have chosen had to do with their, not only their heartfelt love toward each other, but it also had a lot to do with their intellectual love. It seems like they were so much into admiration of each other, adoring mm-hmm. each other from who their capacity and capabilities were. Some of the couples you've chosen, they're not necessarily into the original traditional marriage or marital form. And some of them are in complete open sexuality in their relationship or in their marriages. Yeah. And it seemed like as I was reading your book and going through the different couples, I think that many times there is this thought or the myth that we have that only good couples or healthy couples or successful marriages or couplehoods are the ones who they go into a religious matrimonial, bond together, and they have family and all of that. And then this kind of like goes on for about 50, 60 years. Those are what we call a successful couple. And it was very different as I was reading the notion of what couplehood was to each and every one of these couples. Can you share a little bit about your findings?
It's really, I'm so glad that you're asking this question because, you know, given my own background, I come from a very, very traditional family and a very traditional culture. But putting my psychologist hat on, it was like doing an investigation on what are the forms of partnerships? What do people find? And honestly, some of the things that I read, I was like completely shocked. But when you start thinking about it, if it works for a certain couple, who are we to judge? So number one thing that I found out, and I think you would agree with it, is that when you have people who are trailblazers, so in looking at trailblazers and innovators, we know that they are out of the box. They do their work out of the box. That's why they actually broke ground. So when you take that personality, you can't say that they're going to be out of the box in their careers and not in the way they look at life. It kind of carries through in their relationships. And a lot of them were ready to explore different ways of being with each other so that they could see what it would feel like. I mean, one of the grand examples is Simone de Beauvoir and Jean-Paul Sartre. And I had written about Simone de Beauvoir in my last book, and she's the mother of feminism, you know. And what's interesting is that both she and Jean-Paul Sartre, who were the foremost thinkers of the 20th century in existential philosophy, decided that they don't want to get married, but they want to be together for the rest of their lives. But how could they make that work? And it became a very, very messy kind of relationship for them. It wasn't that they thought that they wanted to succeed. They just wanted to make something work that worked within the framework of their lives. And that to me was interesting, that you would have a partner that would witness you through all the stages of your life, through all the hurts, through all the achievements, and still stay together. That to me was very interesting. And then we have some people who worked within a traditional framework, or people who got divorced and yet had the same amount of love for one another and kept together. We had couples that one partner passed away, and you think, how do they keep being a couple when one has passed away? So those are the interesting things of looking at case studies?
Some of the concepts that I was reading, I was really intrigued, and it really, really sat with me. The conversation that Carl Jung had about the feminine and the masculine part of self, and to know that the concept was that we're coming together because there's a part of us that it gets represented by the other, the mate, which is the another part of us, whether, you know, the feminine part of us or masculine part of us, that we really, really gravitate to, and we fall in love with the part that we're not necessarily living into, and then therefore we live through that in that. And says, seldom or perhaps never does a mirror develop into an individual relationship smoothly and without crisis. There's no coming to consciousness without pain. And like for Carl Jung and his wife, it was more like coming to an individuation within and then how to come together. This was such a beautiful concept. And I've read, you know, Carl Jung before, but this was such a, as I was reading here, it really brought to the forefront of how much we need to be our individual self and how much we need to honor who we are, and then yet come into this union and have this freedom to move in and out and in and out of this, you know, togetherness and individuation and togetherness and individuation. And then you could see that in different ways in all of the couples that you were sharing their life with us.
Very perceptive. And I think, you know, I started with the introduction of the book talking about the masculine and the feminine, how there's two polar charges, and the masculine and feminine, the source of attraction is the otherness of the other. And I really did an intensive study of not only biblical, Buddhist, Chinese, Talmudic, and psychological investigations on these two polarities. So they're seen in fairy tales as well. So these are basic principles, if I may say, of the laws of attraction. And I am a real... I went to the Jungian Institute for a year, and in fact, I use the Jungian philosophy of attraction and partnerships in my women's courses. One of the great books is called Invisible Partners. And what it's really talking about is that a woman has a female and a male side, and a man has a feminine and a masculine side. We both have those sides together. So what happens is that for women, we get to really develop our feminine side, and we gravitate towards that anyway. And so our masculine side is underdeveloped. The interesting thing is that for women, the blueprint for masculine traits is usually the father or some of the significant others in their early childhood. So when they get older, what's interesting is that that underdeveloped male side is projected onto another man. And oftentimes they will have traits that are very similar to those male relationships, first early male relationships that a woman had. And it's the same for men as well, that they project their underdeveloped feminine side onto the woman. And the big task of any relationship, and it's really truly a spiritual endeavor, is for men and women to come together and wholly own who they are. And I always say that the most successful relationships are those where you are whole already yourself. So you're not looking at the other person to complete you in every way. The more whole and the more mature you are, the more self-aware you are, the less projection you do onto another person. And so you come to the playing field in a more even-keeled base.
Yes. One of the things that also showed up for me as reading through the, you know, life of all of these wonderful couples, it was the notion that there's a shift that happens between when you meet someone and they're your lover, whether the lover is sexual or heart-wrenched or intellectual lovers. And then there's something shifts when the wife becomes the mother and they have children, and then they took on the role of that and then kind of lose in that perspective the role of the lover. And many of these, as I was going, and you know, clients that we see and people that we talk to, you see this shift that happens within a dynamic of a marriage when these roles are either supersede each other or kind of just get separated completely. Like they can't come back after the mother side shows up and the dynamic changes. They don't know how to come back to the lover, and some people do come back to the lover when they're aware of that. What's your opinion about this notion that shows up in the marriages?
I think it's a very natural thing. I even think of myself when I had the kids, you know, there's such a big shift in your identity, and motherhood becomes such an integral part of who you are. And I think one of the things that worked out for me is that we were consciously aware that if we lose, you know, kids will grow and they'll go their own way. And if we lose touch of our own relationship with our significant other, with our beloved, then what happens when they get older and you're left with someone that you hardly know? So it's something, I think, you know, good relationships are hard work. Plain and simple. As much as you love each other, there's a lot of hard work that comes into it, and a lot of awareness that as women, we don't want to lose touch of our sensuousness, of our sensual nature. When you're raising very young kids, it's very hard when you're so tired to be even thinking about that. But it's something that it's an agreement that we need to have with our partners. I mean, talking about it, really honestly talking about it and saying, let's set aside some time that's only between you and me. And for people who don't have help, that are raising kids, that becomes much tougher.
Definitely. Now, I'm going to ask you a hard question.
Sure.
Which is, which one of the couples that you were writing about have felt more kind of like exciting for you? So I want to hear about that. And I know that through the couples that we're some people who are watching and listening to us might not know all of the couples because it might not be necessarily in their field to know, but everybody knows Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip. So I really want you to also let us know what you found in their couplehood. But again, the hardest question, I know, for someone who's gone through every one of these, and each one of them are probably like your babies, which you've done a lot of research on. But I'm going to ask you the hard question. Which one was like you felt really, you've learned so much after you did so much research on this particular couple?
I think, you know, of course, the most inspirational was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I had the honor of interviewing her. Her relationship with her husband was really something to be admired. But if I wanted to say exciting, there was something very soul-oriented and transformative in the relationship between Laurie Anderson and Lou Reed. So Lou Reed was a punk, he's inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Most people know him as the singer for Walk on the Wild Side, and he was definitely a wild, wild man. And here's Laurie Anderson, third marriage for Lou Reed. And for me, what was exciting to see the possibility of two people finding each other when both had careers of their own, both were very well known. They were at midlife. They weren't young anymore. So they're kind of jaded. But how the two people coming together could be alchemy. Like there would be some kind of chemical reaction in that relationship that made them both better. to me, I thought that was really spectacular to see what the potential of a relationship could be. And for those people who are on their second marriages or third marriages, how you can find the person that's right for you later in life and how it could really be transformative for your own growth. Which one was yours?
I think that my fascination went more with people who I had read their book and I was fascinated with them and didn't know much about them. So it went more with Jean-Paul Sartre and, you know, Salvador Dali and Jung. And I was more like, I really needed to know who they were without their work. So I really got engrossed in that. With the people who were more contemporary, it was more like through media, I had gotten to know them a little bit. So I was more just fascinated with the ones I didn't know.
Well, let's talk about Salvador Dali and Gala. I mean, talk about... Yeah. I don't know, exciting, adventurous, it defied all odds. I mean, I read 6 of his biographies, 6, because I needed to, you know, every single sentence that you write in a book gets fact-checked. So every sentence I had to say where I got it from, and then I had to corroborate it and validate it with other things. So this was an intense research project. But to think, I mean, most people may not know about this. Salvador Dali, of course, was a brilliant painter, a leader in his surrealist movement. But here he is, a man that didn't have sex, was married and wildly in love with his wife for 52 years. And how did that work with no sex? Had sex. I thought that just broke every boundary. And what's interesting to me, Fujian, is how it was love at first sight for them. Mm-hmm. So there must be something very unconscious in the way that your own unconscious knows who to gravitate towards for your growth. Like how love at first sight, they could grab each other when they were so wildly different. Isn't that interesting?
It's amazing to me. Even when people come to me, the couples come to me, sometimes I look at, you know, how did you meet? What happened? And you could really see that some couplehood just does not work even. It's painful, but both of them, but there's this pull that constantly brings them back together. And I've always like wondered, sitting here, like nothing about this couplehood is logical, nothing. They're both suffering in some sense. And yet the pull that brings them keeps bringing them back and back and back. It's almost like an addiction form, but it definitely makes them grow. And you're absolutely right about the subconscious move that shows up. And obviously Jung said, and then, you know, in Imago Therapy, I think Harvell Hendricks brings a lot of that into his work. It's fascinating. So before we leave, I really want you to also talk about Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip, because I know if people don't know any of your couples that you've said here, they know this couple.
Yes.
So what did you learn from that, their relationship?
You know, what's very interesting is that when you really look at the Prince Philip's background, I mean, he was basically a refugee without parents, and he had the title, but he came with a lot of baggage of his own, without a real sense of family. He comes and he has to actually sublimate all his male, and he was a dashing, can-do kind of man. He has to sublimate everything to support the family firm, which is the royal family. And he had a very hard time with it. Honestly, he had a very hard time. You know, it's to think that in the 1950s, men, especially of a higher socioeconomic status, were always the ones that were up front. He had to walk 10 steps before his wife. There were so many things that he wasn't present or he couldn't give his opinion on. But what's very interesting about this couplehood is that how through time they renegotiated their roles. And I think that is a key to the success of many couples, is that you have to come again and again as a changing person to renegotiate. And for them, it was especially difficult because they were in a way ruled by the structure of the royal family and the code, but how they made it work. And I think what's interesting is that the last 20 years or 30 years of their relationship has been the most gratifying because they've set into their roles in a way that allowed for both of them to live within it. But it wasn't, you know, for sure that marriage had its own challenges. But look, to me, that was a case of real commitment and also shared vision. Like, they both bought into the fact that they needed to commit and have a shared vision. And they kept on coming back to the drawing board to make it work.
And it's interesting because what you just said, I remembered also reading in the Serge Gainsbourg and Jane Birkin that at one point, when Birkin was becoming much more famous, that Gainsbourg says, I was becoming Mr. Birkin and that was just too hard for me. So you could see when the power changes or the equality in the role of the public or of your fame and all changes, it sometimes is devastating for one of the couple, and to be able to reconnect and compromise or negotiate what's going on with the boundaries, it's a huge, huge concept. I mean, obviously, the renegotiation constantly within a couple is something that,
yeah,
but also in their career aspects, which becomes part of their identity. And when all of these identities come together, then it becomes so hard to negotiate all of them at the same time. You've done a spectacular work in here. For everyone who's with us, I really, really suggest for all of you to get Creative Couples. First of all, this book is an artwork by itself. I gotta tell you, like, this is not ordinary book. Just the way it's actually set up, the pictures and, you know, the quality of this is an artwork. This is like a book that needs to be on your coffee after you read it and while you're reading it on your coffee table, because it's kind of like artwork like that. They can find you in angelanazarian.com, right? Anywhere else?
And the book is sold, I guess it's run out on Amazon, but Oceline, who are my publishers, sell the book. And thank you so much for your time and the interview. It's always nice to talk to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to know you, pleasure to read your book, and I hope to have you back with us with your next book. Do you want to share with us what you're working on?
You know, after this fourth one, I think I'm going to take a breather. And I always, after every book, I've said, I'm not going to do another book. Well, I have nothing to share. So I'll just have to wait. These days, I've been really involved with the visionary women and the kind of work we're doing. So we'll see. We'll see. Hope to have you in LA sometime.
Absolutely. And thank you for what you are contributing and the generosity of the visionary group that you are contributing to the COVID-19, to a lot of different agencies and for domestic violence and all of that. Could you share a little bit about your work with that, please?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the Visionary Women came about after I wrote my first book. And then my second book, and my third book is called Visionary Women. What I decided to do was to really gather a community of like-minded women leaders in Los Angeles. And by doing so, we wanted to also bring thought leaders to come and talk to our community. So, we've had Gloria Steinem come and speak. We've had Lima Bowie, who was a Nobel laureate from Liberia, come and speak. So this is a way of us as women growing, getting to know each other and growing together. And the annual membership fee is 100% tax deductible. And what we get to do is that we get to give the money away to a number of women's initiatives. So to date, we have given over $1 million away to various women and girls initiatives. this year has been a tremendous year for us because we were on, you know, we had been growing at such a high pace. And now with COVID, I think that one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, our events are going to be changed. A lot of things will be changing for us, but there's new challenges on the horizon for us as a community, trying to support women and children, you know, giving access to testing to low-income families. You know, we had a whole initiative on homelessness amongst women. So, you know, I feel like we need to pull each other up in this very tough times and really look at reprioritize where we want to give money to, because it's not the same world right now.
Very true. Very yeah. True. Thank you so much. And congratulations on all the things you do. Thank you for all the things you do, and hope to have you on my program again.
Thank you.
And for all of you who are with us, create an amazing world for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, create a great life for yourself. Bye-bye.